All right, so we just finished recording this episode of the podcast, and there are a few issues with the audio. On my end, there's some interference, a little bit of hum, some from my iPhone, some from AirPort on my computer. I'm getting in touch with makers of my audio interface to see if we can get that worked out. And on Matt's end, there was a little bit of an encoding problem that introduced some hiss whenever he's talking. We're both pretty technologically competent, but we are new at this, so bear with us while we get the little bugs worked out. And we promise better quality in episodes to come. Let's start the show. Welcome to the iLife.com podcast, episode number 5. This is an audio podcast. We'll probably be doing these a little bit more often now that, well, so that we can do them a little bit more often. Today probably our main topic is going to end up being the iPhone SDK, because that's been the, you know, huge Apple announcement this week.
Well, not this week, but in the past...
In the past few weeks.
Yes.
Time.
We're basically going to talk about the iPhone SDK and what we think about it and the potential it holds for the iPhone and Apple in the coming months and certainly weeks and years, I guess.
Yeah.
If you don't know, certainly you probably should at this point, Apple released the iPhone SDK to anyone who would like to download it. You can go on their website and download the SDK. It's similar to the one that they give you for Mac OS X, in that it uses some of the same apps such as Xcode and Instruments, and it's based off of the same framework and similar APIs. You've got, you know, your core services, all that kind of stuff. If you know what I'm talking about, then probably don't need me to explain it to you, but
though, of course, the iPhone also has a pretty rich media layer for interacting with, you know, with audio and playing back video in H.264, which is kind of considered a whole separate layer
right, by
Apple.
In fact, though, did you hear about that Apple blocks the iTunes portion of the iPhone in the SDK? You can't access anything that iTunes does. So if someone like Last.fm would like to make a Last.fm iPhone app, cannot do that because that section of code is not available.
So even to just monitor stuff like what's playing right now is not allowed?
I'm pretty sure, although I'd have to check that again, but
that's really annoying, because Last.fm, or well, not officially, but there is already an app like that. I don't know if you've heard of it. I just came across it maybe a week or two ago, called Mobile Scrabbler, and it does exactly that. And to have that cut off as soon as it goes official in June would be really annoying, because right now you can go into Mobile Scrabbler while you're listening to a song. It'll, you know, show you information about it and bio, the artist's bio, and it even has the option to, you know, scrabble songs live, send them up to Last.fm in real time, just like it would on the computer, even over Edge. So,
yeah, well, I haven't heard of that, but I read an article somewhere today that, you know, that the iTunes portion of it was blocked, but certainly that could just maybe be some certain parts or something like that. But anyway, so Apple is now allowing you to run native applications on the iPhone. These are not the web-based ones that you use in Safari. These are physical applications that are running on the iPhone itself.
And it's using the same set of tools that Apple has been using to develop all of the native apps that we've already seen, you know, Photos, Maps, all of those. It's exactly the same, except a little bit more polished.
Right. In the large scheme of things, this is actually great news for everyone, really. There's very little negative things coming from this, and I think that Apple did a great job of making sure they're pleasing everyone, because certainly for the past almost year, it's been now the web applications weren't working, and people have gotten to just jailbreaking their phones to use things they would like to use on the iPhone, and the iPhone is really an amazing development platform that has a lot of potential.
And even with the toolkit that was developed independently for making apps for the iPhone, I mean, people did some amazing things. And now, seeing Apple's offering, I mean, pretty much everyone who's written about it has kind of agreed that it makes the iPhone the most advanced mobile platform, you know, in existence.
Yeah.
By far.
And it's giving even platforms that seem to sort of trump the iPhone in the amount of features and compatibility and openness, like the Google Android that came out in November of last year, I think. It even gives that a run for its money in terms of its features and just what the iPhone offers. So, I mean, I think that this is going to take the iPhone to another level. I mean, we've already seen the iPhone out for a year. It sold approximately 4 million in a couple of countries now, looking to expand to Asia later this year. I think that this can take the iPhone from sort of
The kind of niche product.
Yeah, basically. It's just sort of
Apple like phone.
An Apple phone to something comparable to the iPod. Like, they're doing something that they haven't even done ever with the Mac. Like, you know, there's support for enterprise features that you can still, not to this day, find natively supported by Apple on the Mac. So I think that this is something that is powerful, and that's something that enterprise customers could come to, and something that, I mean, just it just has a lot of potential. So I think,
and it easily stands to be Apple's big enterprise product. You know, they lost out in the computer realm to Microsoft, but now, you know, among the 4 million iPhones have been sold, probably a small percentage of those have been to the enterprise, and now, you can imagine, like, as already Nike and Disney have, to some extent, other major companies handing out iPhones and making them the platform of choice.
Right.
With, you know, custom applications for monitoring things in their business. And then, of course, you know, just keeping track of all the calendars and contacts that they're already used to doing. But
right. Which is something right now that BlackBerry or RIM controls. And if you've ever used a BlackBerry, you know that it's a pretty powerful tool, but in terms of the UI and that little scroll bar or scroll wheel, and or on the new ones, the little touch wheel or whatever the hell they call it. But it's something that's sort of like 1999, if I could put it that way. I mean, it's something.
Yeah, easily. I mean, they haven't really needed to change, I guess, is the thing with BlackBerry.
Right.
They dominated so extensively that everyone in the business world knows BlackBerry, and that they have no need to want or to expect anything new.
Right. I mean, if you look to BlackBerry phones from maybe like, you know, 03, 04 to now, they've changed relatively nothing. I mean,
And they still adhere to the same design principles of having no touch screen, of having a full QWERTY keyboard,
right.
Of having, and of course, you know, having the main feature being a set of services provided by RIM of pushing information, especially email, out to people's devices.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is a place that Apple can really grab the market by offering something innovative, yet completely open and supportive to everything that they're, you know, the enterprise customers or whoever it may be are used to seeing. And I mean, even on a side note, I wrote an article about this, but I would like to see exchange support on the Mac. I mean, like, honestly, if they're bringing that to the iPhone, and while, yes, it's supported with Entourage and the set of tools from Microsoft, I mean, where is that for mail? Or, I mean, could we see something like that?
Yeah, you're almost wondering, like, during the town hall meeting or where this was all introduced, someone out in the audience was making the changes that were being pushed out to these phones. And I was a little bit curious what applications they were using, because, you'd expect it to be iCal address book, but, I mean, would that right now, would that even be possible to be doing what they were demonstrating on stage.
That's true.
With the built-in set of Mac tools.
Yeah. That's actually a good point. I did not think about that before. But, I mean, it's something that, that almost makes me wonder where Apple is choosing the Mac over the iPhone like they did, you know, with Leopard last year. We saw that it was delayed from spring of 2007 to fall of 2007 because, most people say, is the iPhone needed to be completed. So, I mean, that's fine, but in the long run, will the iPhone or whatever Apple's into trump the Mac? I mean, honestly, if they're bringing something to the iPhone, I think it should come to the Mac, and it probably will eventually, but, you know, just something to think about while you're enjoying these new features on your iPhone.
Oh, yeah. But it's, I mean, it's the kind of unfortunate truth of what Apple's even been doing for years, that it's much easier for someone to adopt the platform of an iPod or an iPhone, because it doesn't matter what kind of computer you're using, then, for someone to switch over their whole life to using a Mac. So in some ways, it's not hard to imagine that Apple is willing to put a little bit more effort into developing the iPhone platform than into developing its computers, which is unfortunate. But
yeah, actually, there's a great Wired article that came out, I think today or recently, about Apple and their continued use of like proprietary software to hardware combinations, and how that actually ends up working for the better in the case of iTunes and the iPod. And a percentage of these people who love the integration between their PC, iTunes, and their iPod or iPhone, whatever it may be, then eventually come over to the Mac and like that as well. But it would be nice to see more aggressive marketing in the Mac, or, you know, not marketing, but feature sets, or I don't know how to put
this. More aggressive development, just to kind of push the platform forward and let it into new markets.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, there's nothing horribly wrong with OS X or the Mac platform, but...
Well, even just looking at, I noticed this at a Mac users group meeting that I went to recently. They were doing a presentation on iWork, and a lot of the people still there, a lot of people there, and I noticed also a lot of people in the school system here are still using AppleWorks, because iWork was built with a totally different approach than AppleWorks, and it's much less of an office tool and much more of a creative tool.
June is going to be a very interesting month in terms of to see what people have been doing with this SDK from now until then, to see what Apple's been doing with the iPhone. I mean, a lot of people are thinking that in June they're going to release a 3G iPhone, which probably would be nice, because 2.5G really isn't cutting it, and if they're really trying to aggressively market the iPhone, among other things, that's probably one of the last remaining big complaints with the iPhone, is the speed of the Edge network. So...
And AT&T, as far as I know, is indeed equipped for 3G, right?
Yes, they're fully equipped for 3G. I think some people were saying, or, you know, one of the AT&T guys, or maybe Jobs, was saying that they weren't ready to handle as much traffic, or maybe I'm making this up or something, but I do recall hearing something like that. But certainly they've got over a year now to retool their network, if they had to, or beef it up. To handle the increased traffic. Although there is great numbers you're seeing with the mobile Safari browser taking over the whole mobile browsing market share there. It's something like last
year. Oh, yeah. I mean, Bank of America was reporting, as you know, they were showing off in that presentation, that somewhere around 25%, I think it was, of all their mobile banking now is coming from iPhones.
Yeah.
And that's a huge figure, considering, I mean, there are 4 million iPhone users out there, but considering the fact that so many phones these days would be capable of accessing their mobile banking site.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the iPhone definitely has a lot of potential. And where it goes from here, honestly, no one can really foresee or predict so accurately. It's in the hands of the developers, which is always a good thing. I mean, you've got the whole world here open and ready to do whatever they want or bring whatever they want to the iPhone, more or less.
Yeah. Though here's something I have to get out here. I was talking about this in an email to one of my friends, but I don't think I've really come out and said that much about it. You can still see Steve Jobs' kind of influence and reluctance to let people into the iPhone in the whole SDK effort. And it's getting a little bit annoying. I'm just, from the perspective of a potential iPhone developer, I have to get this out here. Right now, it's still clear that the iPhone is considered very separate from a computer platform, because what you can do with it is being limited a lot. And the SDK is great, but all of the bad parts of the SDK right now aren't limitations that Apple, of things that Apple forgot to include, but things that Apple deliberately added to limit what you can do with it. Like, right now, only a few people can test out their apps on iPhones and move their apps over to iPhones. And you have to pay Apple $100 to build anything that is capable of running on an iPhone. Right now, the majority of developers out there are just running their apps in a simulator. And I've applied for this program, and you actually have to be approved by Apple, and there's a long, long waiting list for this. Apple is doing that to try to control apps just getting out there, because obviously there are installers floating around, but that $99 fee covers getting into the App Store, and at the moment, the only way you're going to get any of these official apps out is through the App Store. So that freedom's being taken away. And the second part that I noticed as soon as I started looking through the documentation is, and as you mentioned with being denied access to the iTunes library, you're being denied access to virtually everything. Pretty much you have access to, let's say, the photo picker and the people picker. You don't have access to any of the buttons on the iPhone. You don't have access to the speakers on the iPhone. You can send out audio, but it chooses where it goes. You don't have access to, I don't remember if I said this, the dock connector, but... And you can't, and this is the biggest thing, you can't even have applications running in the background. So clients, you know, like AOL's instant messaging client that was demoed by Apple and by AOL representatives, by the current rules, you can't stay logged in unless that application's at the front. So while Apple's really putting this forward as a great new platform, they're stepping in continuously to remind developers what they're supposed to be doing with it and what they aren't allowed to do.
Hmm.
So, and that's very different from some of the other platforms out there, like Palm, you know, which is getting a little old, but there's this, you know, huge community out there of Palm developers, and Palm does absolutely nothing to stop them from making their PDAs into anything they can imagine.
Yeah, I mean, they've been very reluctant from the start to open up the iPhone to anyone, and for whatever reason, some speculate that they don't want it to turn into another PC where it's, you know, viruses running around, or Apple doesn't want to let other people use it for whatever reason, or they don't want to take the network down. You know, just they've small things have been thrown around here and there, but no one really knows the real reason. But hopefully that Apple remembers what happened to the Macintosh in 1984 was that there was very little developers for it. So most people wanted to stick with the IBM, the Microsoft side, and this GUI thing sort of scared them at the time, and everyone sort of ran away. And while the Macintosh served as an amazing machine in terms of the interface and design, etc., it was crippled by the fact that only Apple was essentially it's just Apple programs on there, and you're limited by what you could do on it. I mean, you had like Mac Paint and Mac Write or Draw or whatever there were, but very little other applications. And I think that the iPhone shouldn't end up like that. I mean, the iPhone has a lot more potential, and I'm glad that they're opening it up this far, and hopefully as it progresses, it becomes more lax. Or they find ways to keep themselves happy, yet keep the developers happy at the same time. So I heard that they're being very selective about the people who can build iPhone applications right now during the beta phase, and that as they open it, they will slowly accept more and more people.
Mm. Even so, though, the fact that you have to pay $100
right.
to be able to build anything that runs on the iPhone, it's a little bit silly.
Yeah.
Even if you don't need to distribute it through the App Store.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because it uses the signed keys. And, I mean, you know, honestly, I don't know what the justification behind it, I guess, is that that's paying for part of the App Store, and... Yeah, I mean, honestly, I have no idea the whole justification behind everything could be, but... what can you say? I think that at least some people, or a lot of people, will take advantage of it, regardless of the limitations, and, show
absolutely.
Us what the iPhone can do, and certainly, hopefully, Apple will continually allow us to do more and more with the SDK. I mean, like they say, it's still in beta, so theoretically, things could change from now and then. They probably won't change very much, but who knows? Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the whole current iPhone, hacking community with, installer.app and all those kind of people who are involved in these things. What happens to that community as the App Store is rolled out? Certainly, I think that they'll still remain around for at least a little while, because Apple does limit a lot of the things that installer.app supports and embraces, such as
such as unlocking tools,
right.
Such as anything that uses more than a little bit of bandwidth on Edge, anything that Apple doesn't like. I mean, yeah, there's always going to be the installer.app and the underground community, if only to keep iPhones unlocked.
Right. And they say there could be over 1.5 million iPhones that aren't on AT&T.
Wow, that's a pretty huge figure.
That is a pretty big figure. I mean, globally, that equates to, I guess, a little less on AT&T, but it's interesting.
Well, it has to, considering, considering that Apple isn't even offering it in all too many countries.
Right.
But, I'm sorry, what were you saying?
I mean, it's interesting to see this strange data you have to sort of collect to get any kind of information on the iPhone. I mean, you've got data coming out from AT&T, you've got data coming out from Apple, you've got data coming out from people through browser market shares. You've got a lot of different sources, and it's very hard to pinpoint a number. You get numbers all over the place, so... I wonder who knows. I mean, because someone's got to know these real numbers or close numbers. Who knows, and why aren't they coming out to be more public? I mean, I guess we know that...
Well, there's always going to be a little bit of secrecy.
To give
Apple a little more leverage as to how they're going to market the platform and what... Just their decisions. I mean, obviously, mostly Apple and AT&T kind of have a monopoly on those statistics.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. But, I mean, if I would think, from a marketing standpoint, if people are out there blatantly saying that there's 1.5 million unlocked iPhones running on different networks, that they might say, oh, well, there's not. Here's the numbers. Or,
But it may almost be to Apple's advantage to stay away from those numbers. To say...
Right. It's true.
We do not want to have anything to do with iPhone unlocking. Some people may have unlocked their phones. We are not keeping track of them.
But that's the thing. They are. You know they are.
But from a public standpoint, it's not... Once Apple starts getting involved in iPhone unlocking, then they'll give it more publicity, and they'll make it more accepted.
True. I mean, the thing is that with all of this, the iPhone SDK limitations, the price, the unlocking, all this stuff, it all goes back to the plain fact that Apple's a pretty stubborn company, and to get them to do things that, or well, to get them to do things that people request isn't always the easiest thing.
Yeah, virtually impossible. I've even heard internally that if you want to get a bug fixed or a feature requested, you have to go through the same channels as everyone else, even if you work at Apple.
Yeah.
And it still ends up being based on you know, the volume of requests and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that you can say that it works to the disadvantage of Apple, but you know, it's such a sort of mysterious kind of thing. Is if you look at it, yes, they do blatantly ignore the users a lot, but that's sort of like the tech users who are always pushing the limits of what they want. But you know, Apple sort of has always been this company that's very friendly to people who aren't so tech savvy, or you know, who don't.
Yeah, like the kind of people who are at that Mac users group meeting, talking about tweaking their iWork themes and
right. I mean,
to make better newsletters.
Right, or people who just use the iPhone for the phone and for contacts and just don't really care about other things. I mean, certainly when they see other things, they may be tempted to do them, but there are a large percentage of people who just don't care enough. And fortunately, unfortunately, whatever, that makes up a piece of Apple's install base. And that may not be the reasoning behind that they're so stubborn. I think it has to do with the way the company's run and has been run. And while, yes, they do ignore users, they're also doing a lot of good things in terms of how many iPhones are selling, or how many Macs are selling, or how many iPods are selling. So, I mean, somewhere they're doing something right. And while it may suck to be someone trying to develop for the iPhone or whatever it may be, that just may be how things are. I mean,
and it's still a young platform.
Yeah, that's the other thing too. It's a young platform, and hopefully Apple will continue to stay on top of it. So.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's just about it for the iPhone. I don't know, you have anything else to say for this episode?
Yeah, not really at the moment. There's always going to be new things coming up, but
yeah. I mean, certainly trying to do this podcast more often. We're really sorry for the break. It's hard to get up and do this, and hopefully once we get into a more routine schedule, you may start seeing more podcasts.
And in all honesty, we got to admit that we are still new at this.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, every day's a learning experience, honestly. And
we're not part of the old Tech TV crew.
Right.
Coming over and starting our own website.
Right. I mean, we've got other things to be doing, school and work and stuff like that. So, unfortunately, it can't be our full-time job, but we're doing our best to keep everything rolling. And certainly, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, etc., you can email me. I'm Matt@theilife.com, or Sydney.
I'm Sydney@theilife.com.
Right. Or send us an instant message. Our screen name is The iLife, or Twitter. Our username is The iLife. Yeah, that's about
or
it.
Or just leave a comment.
So with that is episode number 5, and I am Matt Dodd.
And I'm Sydney San Martin, for iLife.com.
We'll see you next time.